acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 54, Destination Rooftop, Sunday, September 21st, 2014. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yin Hu Cha Yuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and the podcast is available on iTunes. This week's episode includes the following segments: Ever-Expanding Skill Set, The Back Porch, and Yarn Lover at Large. Welcome this week to Turtle Jen, who is Jen, the proprietor of Turtle Made. Jen lives out in Warren, PA, and she is the maker of the 3D printed Turkish spindle that I talked about in a previous episode. This is a very sturdy little spindle, a fast spinner, and a great way to spin in places like parks, at festivals, with young children around, where you might not want to use a more delicate handcrafted spindle. I've been having a lot of fun with my drop spindle from Turtle Made, and I will link to Jen's shop in the show notes. Ever-expanding skill set. This month is all about barley in the Bulk Bins cook-along, and that is my year-long endeavor to experiment a little more with products that I can buy at the Bulk Bins in my local health food store. In September, I have been working with barley, and this evening I am ready to try a recipe mentioned by Judy in the Dyes, who suggested lemony barley salad with kale pesto, and this is a recipe that appeared in the August edition of Food and Wine magazine. I was able to find the recipe online. I have all of the ingredients, and I'm going to give it a try. I think I will also be trying the butternut squash and barley risotto recipe from Cooking Light as well, and that was suggested by a listener, I think over a week ago, but I've managed to procure the recipe and all of the ingredients. So once I record this podcast, there's going to be some major barley cooking happening at Yin Hu tonight. If you would like to expand your culinary horizons by cooking along, use hashtag BulkBinsCAL when you post your photos on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, to let other people know that you are cooking along with Yarns at Yin Hu listeners. I welcome your suggestions, and I certainly love to see photos of the food you cook on the thread in our Yarns at Yin Hu group on Ravelry. Earlier today, I worked on expanding my skill set by working on some fiber arts in a very public way. I attended the Arts in the Park Festival. It's a street festival in Highland Park. And I was there with my friend Christy, who has just opened a new space called The Inner Space in Highland Park, devoted to creative wellness and workshops for enhancing creativity and wellness for adults. Christy has asked me to teach some classes, and I suggested some spindling classes, meditative spindling, and we're also going to collaborate to offer a day-long writing workshop. So at the festival, Christy was promoting her space and talking to folks about the different workshops that were available. And I was there with my drop spindles and my blending board. And I spent the day making some Rolags and spinning alternately and talking to folks about the fiber arts. While I've talked to a lot of people about the crafting that I do, and I'm certainly not averse to explaining things to people since I'm a teacher, this festival experience was really new to me. It was exciting. It was interesting to share what I love to do with a lot of people. But it was also challenging to work and talk and be aware of who was standing around and what questions they had and what they were looking at. And it was also very, very tiring, using a different kind of energy than I normally do. And I was active pretty much the entire time. I was either using the blending board to make Rolags, or I was demonstrating spindling either sitting or standing at the booth. I am very hopeful that spending some time at this street fair is a good way to promote Christy's space and get some signups for the workshops that are being held there. And if anyone has any questions about the inner space workshops, or in particular the spindling, I would be happy to answer them if you contact me through a personal message. One exciting thing that happened was Christy's friend Dylan was there to help with the booth and support her new endeavor. And he took a video of me doing some spindling. It's a very short video, but I've never seen myself doing any aspect of my craft. So it was very informative. And I think with just a few quick shots, he was able to really capture the entire process, the different aspects of using a drop spindle to spin. The spindle in the video is one of Dawning Dream's beautiful drop spindles, and I was working on spinning some Rolags. I have to say, in terms of ever-expanding skill set, I'm getting much better at using the blending board to create consistent and very nice looking Rolags. The back porch. This morning I completed the plying of a braid I've been working on since the beginning of August. It's a Polworth silk blend from Three Waters Farm. Marianne's fiber prep and her handling of color are both extraordinary. I chose the rooftop colorway, and this is fiber that I spun exclusively on my Jenkins drop spindle, because I was participating in the fall mini spin-along with the Jenkins Woodworking Lovers on Ravelry. Spinning 4 ounces on a drop spindle is something that I never thought was possible, especially in a span of under 2 months. And with attention to spinning technique and the development of a practice of spinning, I really did expand my skill set to be able to drop spindle for up to an hour a day and to get some nice consistency in the singles that I was spinning, and to develop a method for plying them so that I could preserve the color transitions. And so what I did was I discovered that what's comfortable for me on the Turkish spindle is to spin about the weight of yarn that is equivalent to the weight of the spindle. In terms of my Aegean, that is 19 grams, 0.67 ounces. And that's about what the spindle could hold before it started to react differently. I had trouble controlling the spin, and also it would drop quite frequently because I was spinning thin singles and I was putting twist into them, but not an incredible amount of twist. And so once that spindle started to get heavy, it would drop, and that would become frustrating. And also I needed to be careful not to damage the spindle. In terms of my entire process for the spinning, I took the braid and I split it lengthwise down the middle and tried to divide that braid as evenly as I could. And then I spun all of one half of the braid, and that took three separate spindles full. And I would remove each turtle from the Jenkins spindle and I would label it and store it in a plastic container. And I worked until I had all of part A of the braid spun. And then I worked on the second half of the braid and I labeled those turtles as I removed them. I did the plying on my Louette S10 double treadle wheel. So I took the outside end of the last turtle of each braid and I held those together and I plied them together. And I kept plying them together as long as the color remained consistent. As it started to become inconsistent, I removed strips of singles from one or the other turtle until the colors matched up again. And then I continued plying. Sometimes I was able to reuse some of the singles that I had ripped out later in the plying process. So there wasn't too much wreckage, carnage as I went through the process of plying those singles together. And then what I did do, because I really love this fiber and I wanted to preserve every part of it, I did a plying ball and I have retained all of those extra bits of singles, except for things that are just, you know, a couple of inches long. I wrapped all of those onto a plying ball so that I can ply that together some other time and, you know, have maybe 10 yards or so of some yarn that I can use for some small project, maybe an ornament or something like that. In all, I was able to achieve 500 yards of a fingering weight yarn. It's perhaps a light fingering and with beautiful color changes and really nice consistency of spinning and plying. I'm quite happy with the result. This is the most yardage I've ever been able to achieve from a 4-ounce braid. And I am just consumed with thinking about what I am going to knit with this very precious yarn. I don't think I've ever felt so proud of yarn that I've spun, and I'm torn between wanting to knit with it and wanting to do more spindling with my Turkish spindle. So I'm very pleased and also really grateful to the wonderful spinners on the Jenkins Woodworking Ravelry thread. They have just been so supportive and so enthusiastic about everyone spinning. These spinners also are very conscientious about posting photographs of their work in progress and posting photographs that really show the yarn that they're making and the techniques that they are using. So it's a great way to celebrate what you're doing, but for me, it's also a great way to learn about what other spinners are doing. I've asked a few questions on the board and I've received very thorough and prompt replies from other spinners. So it's been a very positive experience. Jenkins Woodworking fans are truly excellent individuals and great citizens of Ravelry. So I wish them all well as they complete their fall mini spin along, and I look forward to seeing the projects that they post. Yarn lover at large. It's been a very exciting weekend to be a yarn lover because it just so happened that I had back-to-back events and some really exciting things happening this weekend. When I was in Nashville for the Super Summer Knit Together, hosted by Laura and Leslie, the Knit Girls, I was able to reconnect with Laura Nelkin of Nelkin Designs. I first met Laura when she came to my local yarn store, Mountain Knits and Purls, in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, to teach a class on her mudra cuff. I attended her class and I talked about my experience in episode 5 of this podcast. And there's a photograph of the two of us at Mountain Knits and Purls. And we reconnected when we were in Nashville this summer. At that point, she was very excited about the upcoming release of her first book, Knockout Knits, and we made plans that she would be a guest on Yarns at Yin Hu, but we didn't have any plans about when we would meet up or how we would conduct an interview. And as the date grew closer, her schedule looked exceedingly full. We were able to sneak in an interview after the conclusion of her class at Trillium Yarns in Morristown, New Jersey on Saturday. Laura came to the New York area to teach some classes at Lion Brand Studios and at Trillium Yarns, which is newly relocated to a beautiful spot right in Morristown, New Jersey on Catano Avenue. And behind the shop, there's a lovely courtyard where Laura had been teaching her class and where there was a very nice grand opening reception and book signing later that evening. So between the conclusion of her class and the reception getting into full swing, Laura and I took off up the street, completed an interview in my car. I parked at the top of the parking deck nearby, so we had a lovely view of Morristown, New Jersey and the surrounding area. We were able to talk about her teaching, her knitting designs, upcoming events, and things that she's excited about. And I'm just really thrilled to bring this interview to Yarns at Yin Hu listeners and really eager to promote Laura and her book, her M Club, and all of the wonderful things that she has going on. She is such a warm, engaging teacher and such a thoughtful designer that I can't help but want to bring her energy and her insights to Yarns at Yin Hu listeners. I hope you enjoy this interview and that you check in to the Ravelry board for information about how you can win a copy of Knockout Knits. Laura provided a signed copy of this book for a very lucky Yarns at Yin Hu listener. Laura is going to provide me with a prompt for contest entries, and then I will set up the thread on Ravelry and allow a week or two for people to enter the contest and their chance to win this book. And you'll find out more about Knockout Knits in the interview. I hope you enjoy it.
Well, thank you, Laura, for joining me for a Yarns at Yin Hu interview. I really appreciate your being a guest on the podcast. And thank you also for putting up with this makeshift studio that we have today. I hope you'll take a rain check for joining me for a glass of wine on the porch of Yinhu at some point.
Maybe next time I come to Mountain, knit some pearls.
Yes, I think we'll have to make that part of your plan. I need to ask you the question I ask of all of my guests on the podcast, which is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how prepared are you for the apocalypse?
I feel very prepared for the apocalypse. We live pretty rurally and have a well that we can put a bucket down to get our water. Nice. And certainly I know how to garden and I know how to knit and I can sew. I think we'll be okay. I really do. And if anybody's freaking out, they can come join us for the apocalypse.
Well, I've seen, in addition to the knitting, you've been doing these year of making posts, which I've had a lot of fun watching, with sewing, the ginger syrup that was an additive for seltzer. So how does investigation of these other crafts affect your pattern design?
Interesting. Well, year of making, I have to say I've been a very lame year of making participant. I decided that I couldn't handle the guilt or the pressure of having to post a photo every day. Mm-hmm. The reality is I make something every day. I'm just a maker. It's who I am. Mm-hmm. Like, I happen to be a knitter, but I'm also a maker. And when I found that doing year of making was making maybe remotely not fun for me, because I was like, oh, I have to take a picture of it. Crap, the light's really bad. I kind of backed off of taking pictures. But, you know, I cook and I sew a lot, and I'm always more interested in being part of the process of mm-hmm. something that I'm doing. And frankly, my hands can't knit all the time. They can't. And I can't be on the computer all the time. So it's a way of making sure I don't get burned out, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And we have
healthy,
to eat. Yeah.
Active.
And we have to wear clothing.
Well, I wanted to ask you some questions about process. So that's something that really interests me in terms of the process of this new book. I'm wondering, there's a saying of E.M. Forster's that goes something like, how do I know what I think until I read what I wrote? Non-writers might have the idea that an author writes something once it's fully formed in his mind. But what E.M. Forster is saying is that it's a process that unfolds. So I'm wondering, with Knockout Knits, did the process help you come up with the eventual product that you had?
That's a great question. Well, I have to say, we'll get to dive a little bit into what it looks like working with a traditional publisher. So I worked with Random House, with Pottercraft for Knockout Knits, and they certainly needed a pretty structured book outline, like what would be the percentage of different kinds of projects in the book, mm-hmm. what techniques would we be doing in the book, how would those be covered, how would they relate to each other. So I did end up with a pretty firm plan. When I first was working on the book, there were actually going to be four different techniques in the book. And we decided it was just too, like, the breadth of information was too big, and we needed to kind of taper it down a little bit. Otherwise, it was going to be like a 1,000-page knitting Bible, which doesn't make any sense at all. So we focused in on working with elongated stitches and then working lace techniques and then adding beads to those two techniques as the three different styles of knitting that I teach in the book. Interestingly, what was hard for me is every section goes from really super simple beginning patterns. The first pattern of each section is a cuff, and then they build up in technique and difficulty till the end patterns in that section. Mm. Complicated patterns are super easy for me to design because they're so fun. Like, they take a ton of time, but my brain loves them. My needles love them. It's not as easy for me to come up with really simple patterns because I still want those patterns to be interesting and be amusing. So those were the patterns that I struggled with, making sure that I wasn't unintentionally adding too many skills to a pattern, because the goal for the book was to be learning, and so that a mm-hmm. beginning knitter, it would feel as accessible to them as a more advanced knitter. But all of that was planned and discussed and worked on with my editor, which was fabulous. She
was so it was really like helpful. You were writing a curriculum.
I was a little bit like writing a curriculum because my goal for the book was that local yarn stores can use it and, you know, people can buy the book and then buy yarn for multiple projects and like work through it in a semester and knit many things out of it. But I kind of wanted it to be a book for everybody.
So do you have a pattern that grew a little special place in your heart as you were working on it, or maybe the knockout one that you were most excited about when you were working on the book?
I love them all. They're all my babies.
All the babies.
All the babies. One of the things I did, I do a lot of mystery knit-alongs. Multiple times a year I run mystery knit-alongs. And I ended up revisiting in one cowl, the Juego cowl, revisiting the stitch that I'd used in the Juego mystery knit along. It was this very fun mosaic stitch. And one person in the knit along had worked it with a solid color and Noro. So she had this color changing thing happening. And I was like super jealous and wanted to like steal her Juego because it was so awesome. So I realized that I could do a cowl that used a very similar stitch to that I used in Juego, but I used Noro as the background color. And then I just used like a very neutral brown as the solid color. And that was really fun to knit. And it was like knitting with an old friend because it was a stitch I knew that I loved that I hadn't like knit in a year or so. And I love that thing. And I remember when I was knitting on Juego, my family was hungry and my job at home is to cook, not do the dishes. And I was like, let me just get to the pink. And then I'm totally cooking dinner tonight. Like I'm making dinner tonight. And then all of a sudden I'm like at the purple and I was like, how about hummus again? Hummus is a superfood. So my family eats a lot of hummus. I'm going to say that.
So in addition to work on patterns and pattern design and keeping things simple when knitters are reading a pattern of yours, you're also a well-loved teacher. And we're very lucky to have you in the New York metro area this weekend because you've been teaching in Midtown at Lion Brand Studios and here at the newly relocated Trillium Yarns in Morristown, New Jersey. I've taken your class before and have found you to be a really fun and responsive teacher. So I wanted to talk a little bit about teaching, being an educator that always interests me, and return to a conversation that we were having this summer in Nashville. You were talking about taking a craftsy class, you being the student, and having certain very powerful feelings for the instructor of the class.
I fell in love.
What was that about?
Well, you know, it's really, I have a lot of students in my Craftsy classes. Craftsy, I have four different classes with them. And the first class I shot with them, probably going on 4 years now, is Mastering Lace Shawls. And it's a it's almost like a 6.5 hour class. Now their classes are more like 2 hours. So by the time people are done taking Craftsy classes with me, they really get to know me. Like they're hanging out with me in their yoga pants for hours. In fact, a few years ago at Rhinebeck, I met a woman who was in my Craftsy class and her husband. And her husband was like, I have hung out in bed with you. Because I think his wife was like watching the Craftsy class while they were in bed. I was like, that's awkward. Super awkward.
It's familiarity.
Yeah, I know.
That's intimacy.
A little something. But what I found was that I meet people and there's this level of intimacy that already exists because they feel like they know me in a way. And I understand it. Like I've learned to understand it. But I was taking a Craftsy class. I think it was with Meg, I cannot remember her last name. It's a sewing with knits class because I've been learning how to sew with knits instead of with woven fabrics. And I'm hanging out with her all day and I keep stopping and starting and replaying a section to understand how to do the shoulder seam. And by the end of the day, I was like, Meg and I would totally be BFFs. Like I totally connect with her. We should hang. And then I realized that that is the experience sometimes that people have when they're taking a Craftsy class with me. And it really helped me like get on the other side of, you know, to be the student instead of the teacher in that situation. And I do still believe that Meg and I would be really great friends. I haven't changed my mind about that.
I have this, I guess a theory about adult learning, most of the teaching that I do involves adolescent learners, and they're kind of preconditioned that there are people in the world who are going to know a lot more than they do, and their job is to learn, and the teacher's job is to teach. But mm-hmm. when you're teaching adults, that's not necessarily the feeling, and if you're going to participate in a class and really learn, you kind of have to check your ego at the door and let your vulnerability and admit that you don't know things. And I think that's part of what ties me to a teacher, is that I feel vulnerable and then the teacher's there showing me what to do, and I feel almost possessive of that experience. Mm-hmm. Like, she belongs to me. Like,
she's my person.
She's mine. There's a closeness there. What do you think about when you are preparing a teaching experience that will be mostly adult learners? Do you think about certain things, keeping that in mind when you're teaching?
I think that I have learned over time to not make any assumptions. What's really hard about teaching adult learners, and it's probably true for kids, but not quite as much, is particularly in yarn shops, you'll end up with students of varying range of skills. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure that the advanced students have a fabulous experience and really learn something, but that the beginner students aren't getting so much information that it becomes like, you know, bead soup, pardon the mm-hmm. pun, in their head, right? Like that they just have so much that they forget what I said the mm-hmm. first sentence into class. And that's a challenge. And I've learned over time how to dole out the information so that everybody gets what they can out of the class. Because a beginner, a person who hasn't taken as many knitting classes and doesn't have as many skills, can't get maybe some of the more advanced techniques, but and vice versa. The advanced students, you want them to walk away feeling like it wasn't a waste of time and money mm-hmm. to have that class experience. And that's something I do spend a fair amount of time making sure that I'm prepped for. And oftentimes it means having extra materials so that if I run into advanced students in class, I can pull something out mm-hmm. for them on that's the side. Nice. And typically those advanced students are independent. So there's not as much hand-holding that needs to happen. Like, I can swoop in and help them explain a concept and then let them play and come back to them mm-hmm. again. And that has worked well to make sure that everybody is taken care of. But I do think a lot, and I develop new classes every so often. I'm actually teaching a new one on Sunday called Elongated Stitches that's based on the first section of the book. And I'm really excited to teach that class, but I've put many hours into thinking through what the pacing of it will be, mm-hmm. how to make sure, because when you try to keep a class together, some people just knit more quickly than other people, and you don't want the slower knitters to feel left behind, and you don't want the faster knitters to get bored mm-hmm. and, you know, like any teaching experience, yeah. I think.
What would be your suggestion for someone taking a class? What would be some tips to get the most out of a class with a teacher designer if you haven't had much experience doing that before?
To not chat so much off topic. I say that in a super loving way. But, you know, some people can like drink a bottle of red wine uh-huh. and like chat with their friends, text on their phone, and knit like double-sided beaded lace. Like, they can do that. They're amazing. There are not very many of them. And some people, to like knit a garter stitch shawl, need to be in a black box with like absolutely no stimulation, no distractions. Mm-hmm. So it can be really hard in class when people start to chatter with each other. Yeah. And it's hard because in a 3-hour class, one of the reasons people take knitting class is for that socialization.
Yeah, it's exciting to be with other knitters. Yeah, and you know, right? Talk.
And you're like not at home on your couch in your yoga pants all alone. But it can be really hard, especially if I'm teaching a more advanced technique. And I've learned over time how to kind of like quiet down a room and allow a certain amount of chatter, but then take it back so that people are concentrating. And then I find what happens is that I'm like, oh my God, they're so bored. No one's talking.
Because you quieted them down.
Because I quieted them down. So then I start telling stories. And I'm like, I'm totally at fault. And the whole room is chatting again.
Good job.
Yeah. That's mad skills.
Who has been your most effective teacher?
My most effective teacher.
Knitting or anything.
That is really interesting.
Who was really a good teacher for you?
Okay, as I think it out, I went to Cornell University for apparel design. And when I went to Cornell, I was really into weaving, and I really wanted to be able to weave as part of my major. And they brought a new faculty member on the year that I started there, who was a weaver, who had a 12-harness loom in her home. And she helped me develop a curriculum for the 3 years I was in that program, because I came in with some credits under my belt. And I wove at her house. I, like, took care of her 22-year-old cat. And she was amazing. And anything, I'd be like, I'm going to try this, like, warp painted thing. And then I'm going to tapestry some hands on top of it, because I want to talk about, you know, I'm trying to make a statement about working with my hands, because I was a college student.
Uh-huh.
I loved and being a college student. That's what you do. She'd be like, yes, but she'd also make sure I put a ton of work into it. Like, I wasn't whipping out projects in a day. They were, like, multiple month-long pieces that I would work on. She was incredibly supportive. And unfortunately, she passed away suddenly in the spring. And I was so excited to share my book with her, because we hadn't talked in many years, even though we would, like, run into each other. And I know her daughter. And it would have been really great to show her kind of, you know, a manifestation of how strong her belief in me was. And she really, you know, I'm an independent learner, and she just fostered that and showed me that I was an independent learner and kept me moving forward.
I think that's true, that good teachers help you learn like you. They help you be you.
Exactly. Right. Instead of just telling you what to do and how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So true. She was great.
So what are you looking forward to? What's coming up? I mean, Knockout Knits is very exciting, and
totally
you're promoting
exciting.
The book and doing a book signing. What's coming up? What are you excited about? What are some other things that we should know about you?
I'm working on a super secret project with a super secret yarn company for a super secret new yarn.
Wow.
How's that for some three
A new
secrets?
Yarn line?
It's a new yarn base for an existing yarn company.
Oh.
And that collection will be out in the late winter. So that's happening in the background. And it's hard because I'm traveling so much right now, and I can't be knitting on that around anybody. So that's, like, you know, hotel rooms, traveling, knitting, but not when I'm around other people. And I also just released signups for the M Club. It's my second year running this club. It is so fun. We have a great group on Ravelry. And next year, there's 4 kits that get shipped to people as they sign up on a schedule. And 2 of those 4 projects are mystery knit-alongs, and then 2 of them are exclusive patterns to the club. So I'm working on the designs for those. And what is excellent fun about them is I include goodies in the kit. So I'm, like, shopping for goodies right now and working with artisans to come up with really special, unique things people can't get anywhere else. Nice. Really fun, like, personal shopper right now. And then I work with dyers, and I try to find bases that people don't typically run across or use before. And it's a great way for a dyer to introduce a new base. And then they dye a semi-exclusive color. Typically they're, like, 6 months exclusivity, and then they can add them to their line, and then the beads to go along with it. So there's a lot of, right now I'm really in the research mode, and I'm already designing the first kit because I make sure I have enough time to test everything multiple times and tech edit it. And the first kit ships in December, and I think signups are open through October at this point, unless it fills up.
And the best way to find out about anything connected to Laura Nelkin is joining the Ravelry group.
Joining the Ravelry group, the best way to find out anything is to sign up for my mailing list, which is on my website. I send out emails as I have something new to say. There's typically hardly ever 2 in a week, because who could do that? I won't have time to knit.
Right.
But if I send to say, like, that signups for the club are open, or they're closing, or I have a new pattern coming out, or I'm teaching somewhere and there's still spots available, I'll send out an email. I try to keep them very photo heavy and word light, but they're always amusing. I'm a lighthearted writer. And there's facts in there, but I really find that, you know, we don't have time to read. So if I can say something with a photo and a few words, it's a great way to do it. So, newsletter. And I do have a blog. I blog in waves. I use my blog mostly for tutorials and techniques. So if people have a question about a pattern, I typically wait until I get like at least 3 emails of people freaking out, needing help with something. Mm-hmm. And then I'll shoot a video or do a photo tutorial for them to show them what to do.
Very effective.
It's like that, you know, now people are going to know that and be like, send her an email.
Tell all your friends when she gets free. She's totally doing this.
She's totally going to shoot you a video. And then I also use them for like giveaways and other things, but I don't tend to blog what I eat for dinner or other things. I do blog when I knit myself something. I always do that, or for my family, I'll blog that as well.
Well, Laura, I want to thank you so much for this interview. And good luck to you with all of your endeavors.
Very exciting. So fun.
My pleasure.
Nice car.
Thanks.
The Asymmetric Hal yarns at Yinhu's Asymmetrical Craft Along continues through September 26th. Hopefully that is enough time for folks to finish projects and post photographs to the finished objects thread on Ravelry. Good luck, everyone, and I look forward to drawing for prizes and announcing winners in an episode very soon.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Chris DeLong and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, but out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's a book, get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature.